But I want to tell you this now. It's a long story, but it's true. And I'm determined to you, knowing that you believe it. That wee farm at Tomac at out of Bridge End, my father still owned it, and a brother, Alec, whose wife came from a house up behind Brady, a place they call the Glack. She was Lavina McMahon. And my father then owned the wee farm at Bridge End, and Alec owned the wee farm here, an inch. And they made an arrangement that Alec would live with the wee farm out at Bridge End, take it as his own, and my father would do the same with the one on the Glack. And we were living it and working at the same as our own, and at dinner time, there were two of us over there, maybe four horses, and there was a gate always walking up where I was reared up there. That was where we were when we were living then. And there was a girl always hired there working, and she was dispatched any day we were in the deck with a white enamel can full of stew for the dinner. And the house had got the name been haunted for years. It had the name been haunted. And it lay empty for very long, and it was empty at this time. And we had gone to it to have our dinner. We knew where the key was, and we had gone to it to have our dinner. And any day my father would come over, a very odd day, with a dinner. And any day he would come over with a dinner, and we were in the house. From one of us, there were three brothers of us, and my father was dead, wild, sore and drunk. And he, this Willie McMaster, a sister of Lavinia's, a brother of Lavinia's, was supposed to kill himself drinking. And after he died, the house was always haunted. People couldn't stay in it. They definitely couldn't stay in it. Mm-hmm. They always left it. And my father always took us up to show us the room where Wally slept. The boy had killed himself drinking. And the floor was different in it to any of the rest of the rooms in the house. It was like gazing up, it was like wheezing up. You couldn't have put your heel through it, but it was wheezing up like a wheezing turnip. And he always took us up to show us the room where this woolly man slept that killed himself drinking. He went out and he got full out in the wee brae, and he come in on a horse's back, and they always had money and always had a thoroughbred horse. And he came in on the horse, and his father and the mother lifted him off and took him up and put him to bed. And in the morning or during the night, he got up and he let go whatever lock of oil, beer or whiskey was on the floor or on the pole or wherever, but he missed it and he had damaged the floor. And father showed us that for years, to let you know what drink would do on you if you let it get the better of you. And we always took it to heart. And the place was sold, and the man bought it, Wally McDade, the weaver. The weaver only wanted the land, he didn't want the house. Yes. He sold the house to a Scotch man, Big Steve. And Big Steve was a man that had charge of the time that were built the post complex in at the Branch Road. Right. He was the head bummer, and they say he fed his nest to say to the extent at that time he never had to work anymore. And McDade sold the house and Big Steve bought it. And Big Steve kept to himself. He never fraternized with any of the outside community at all. He kept by himself, absolutely, and he never spoke to anybody. He never kill you anybody. And we were able to leave. He had been a commando during the war, and he'd been one of the boys who was up at a bridge too far. And he had spent the end of the war as a prisoner of war in Germany. He was no safety. And they bought the house. And they came to live in it. And they entertained nobody or talked to nobody. They made cloth, they were funny weave. It came from Island of Harris, Outer Hebrides. And they were able to set up a weaving apparatus in the kitchen. And they wove cloth and they sold it to some firm in Dublin, some high class firm in Dublin at a big price. Mm-hmm. And that won some. And he was incapacitated, he was either Down syndrome or spastic, some one of the two, I couldn't tell you what he was. But he came to love them whenever they came to the house when he was about 13. And nobody knew any of their business. But Boyd was in one old seat over there, and Big Steve was going past. And he called into Boyd, "Mr. Bryce," he said, "but it'd be all right if I take a couple of turnips out of your field there. We had 2 acres of turnips along the road." "Boyd," says, "surely take a turnip anything you wanted." Mm-hmm. But it was pushing the rain. He says, "Would you stand on, for God's sake, out of that rain, or the weather burning out of the tail of your shirt?" Mm-hmm. And Big Steve came in, and he unburdened himself to Boyd while he was on. Mm-hmm. Joe Hutchison was the last man whose name appeared on the deeds of that place. And Big Steve started to unburden his troubles to Boyd. And he says, "Wherever we telling you," says, "about the trouble we had with your Uncle Joe after we arrived up there?" Boyd said, "No." He said, "I never heard about your trouble." He says, "Your Uncle Joe visited us," he says, "on a very regular basis," he said, "for something over a year. He was a very regular visitor." He says, "It all started one night. We were weaving in the kitchen, and Donald, the son, would have been about 13 at the time. He came in a high state of excitement, and he was blabbering. The father never could know a word he said, but the mother could pick up an odd word. And he was in a high state of excitement, and Big Steve says to her, 'What is he on about?' She says, 'He's calling man, and he's pointing out to the hall.' And he was still calling man. And she got up and she went out and she looked up the stairs. And standing up at the top of the stairs was a man, standing looking down. And she rolled Bloody Murder to Big Steve to come on. Now, if there had been a man there, he was in a very poor wicket. A man no after him. Big Steve came out and said, 'Look.' Big Steve could see nobody. She could see him. And the Donald could see him, the incapacitated whale. They were able to see him. But Big Steve made the tear up the stairs, and of course, he wasn't 3 steps up to. He walked down the door into the room where my father and I showed us where this Willie McMichael died over a gallons of drinking. And he went on then to tell Boyd the whole thing. I described the man. And this Willie McMichael, a brother of Lavinia's, I had seen his photograph out in Bridgend, out in my Uncle Alex. I had seen his photograph out there. And he was a big, square-shouldered man, about 30, sandy hair, a fully skin, the photograph that I had seen of him. And what she described wasn't Joe Hutchison. He maintained it was Joe Hutchison, and he always had the appearance that he came on a horse. And Joe Hutchison couldn't rode a pretty pet, never to talk or ride a horse, and I knew that. But Boyd told me the story, and I knew immediately it wasn't Joe Hutchison, I knew it was Willie McMichael. And he said it went on for a year, and they lived with him, and she lived with him. Now, she was a kind of watchy. she would try to stay the apparition whenever he couldn't. She was a kid. There was kind of an atmosphere about her. She was a kind of watchy looking. She could see him anyway, and Big Steve would see him. But it got to be as Joe on yet. No, he mightn't be the night at all, for he's here last night. They could hear the front door rattling, and they could hear him going up the stairs. And they could hear him taking off his boots in the room up above where they were working. And they loved that. And she said he had all his boots on him, list up as soon as he was coming off a horse. He had that appearance. And that was your Uncle Joe. And boy, he took the story and brought it up to me. Ah, Joe Hutchison, be damned. I was holding him at my house. And that man abutted at them for a year, or maybe more, and they lived with him. On one occasion, she went up after him, up the stairs after him, and he walked down through the door into this room. At that time, it wasn't furnished. When I had only had empty boxes because there was something wrong with the floor. But he always went down there. She went down after him one night. She was no easy scared either. She went down after him and she opened the door and looked in. And she was in a time warp. Now she was a bit watchy. He was sitting on the edge of a bed, taking off his boots. His boots were raised up to that there. He was sitting on the edge of the bed, taking the laces out of his boots. And there's a wardrobe, and there's a chest of drawers, and there's a wash hand basin. Furnished. The same as it would have been 80 or 90 years ago. And again, she called and Big Steve. And by the film, he hit the bottom of the stairs. Nothing. The whole thing disappeared again. But she was able to stand and look at him and describe him. She nearly counted the laces in his boots. And he took the boots off and threw them on the floor. And they, night after night, they heard him taking the boots off and they lived with him. He didn't do them any harm. Or they didn't do him any harm. But I knew immediately, of course, that it was Walt McMahon and he'd killed himself drinking. And that was what my father always took us up and showed us the room for to let us know what he expected if he let drink get the better. But he died out in Bridge End, now with Alec, his sister. Alec's wife was Lavinia. Sister, he died out there, and the father had helped to hull him in the bed till he died. He went into, as they said, DTs. They said it was for want of whiskey. And my father had to hull him in the bed, helped to hull him in the bed till he died. And he said their nights he went out to the road and he could stay in no longer. And there was somebody else in the room with him. And he could stand out in the road as far out as here out the workshop door there or further. And he could hear the rattles of the bed where Willie McMahon was dying in the bed. And that was a great lesson to us, like, to keep clear of the drink. But then, whenever a boy told me this story, I'd forgotten all about it. The Glack House was haunted, surely. And we used to go out and tell Alec. We were walking about the place. And Alec, he laughed. He laughed. He was tired laughing at the idea. Anybody had been fool enough to leave the house because it was haunted. And he was always asking us, "Dare you see any word or anything whenever you're over there? If you went away like the other night, dare you see or hear anything? You know that place is haunted." And he was doing his best to scare us, but we weren't that easy scared. But we never seen nothing or heard nothing. And them boys loved that for a year or a year and a half, and he said gradually it stopped and his visits became less and less frequent. And even the noise after he went up the stairs, that he heard nothing. And it petered out. Something over a year, he stopped coming. But all the time he was coming, he was Boyd's Uncle Joe. Because Joe Hutchison was Boyd's granny's brother. He wasn't Boyd's uncle, but he was someone's, and I don't know what it was to him. But Big Steve referred to him as your uncle Joe. Well, I started then to think back, the track was haunted, surely. And people wouldn't put a stay in it. Johnny Doherty lived up the road, they went to school along with us. And while the thing, the story was still fresh in my mind, I met Johnny at the Bonner Inn. Sir, whenever you were young, did you mind the yarn about the Glack House being haunted? He says, I do, surely. He says, far better than that. He says, for we lived on it for 3 years. Good. I says, you lived on it for 3 years? He says, we did. And said, I did ever you see or hear tell any? No. He says, we didn't. But he says, we were living on an old dump, the fort, round the fort. And there were slits of the roof, and they wouldn't have got a ivory strung up your coat. And the Glack House was lying empty for a half a crown a week, and nobody would go to it. And the father was tempted to go, but he was afraid. But, he says, this is the most unbelievable part of the house. He says, he went out to Bort, and there was a priest out there at the time we called Father and Mom. And to us, there wasn't much of a Christian about him. We regarded him a bad man. He was Father and Mom, he was the parish priest. And he wouldn't give a protest in the light of day if he could have kept it off him. He was very, very vitriolic. But he says, my father went out to Father and Mom, and he told him the story. And he says that this house is supposed to be haunted, and I would like to go and take it, but I'm afraid. He says, is there anything you could do about it? And the priest says, aye. He says, yes. He says, I can go and hold a service of exorcism a minute. This is Johnny Doherty's tour to the bottom of the lane. But he says, it'll cost you. He says, I can't do it myself. He says, I need help. I need the help of a curate. And strangely enough, and the process of my reading, I have a complete transcript of that service, a service of exorcism that's done by the Roman Catholic Church. Right. I have a copy of it up the stairs, and it takes 3 or 4 pages. He says, I would need help. I need a curate to help me. And he said, it'll cost you. Well, Doherty said, I'll try and meet the cost, whatever it is, if you do the business. And he says, I'll do it. And Doherty got the key of the house. And he came out to the priest and he told him the house was empty now. Would you come on and do your stuff? And Father Mullen came in over the bank, a pony and trap. And she was loaded down with blessed salt and holy water and holy ornaments and holy jewels and things that we would have no belief in at all. And he came and he held the service of exorcism in the house. And whenever he was finished, he says to Johnny Doherty, his father, he says, you go on to it now, he says, and he says, you have no boy in it. Now, he didn't leave emphasis on the you, but he said, you have no boy in it. And they were done and they stayed in it for 3 years. The mother died and they had to go home to inherit the property that the mother was on. They left with their own accord. And they were in it for 3 years and neither heard nor seen. And it was whatever Father Mom did. There's no question about that. He was able to allay that. And there was no bother with it until that adolescent child come away with spastic. And it was that that set the thing going again. And then I started to think, is there any reason in the world why this Willie McMichael couldn't get to his rest? Aye. There is. Well, McMahon was blamed for killing himself drinking. I know now what happened to Willie McMahon. Willie McMahon died of diabetes. It wasn't diagnosed. Willie McMahon's nephew, Jim, a cousin of mine, took it when he was 33 years of age. Eileen, a niece, and a daughter told me she was 12 years of age, diabetes. After diabetes, the man died with. It wasn't drink at all. he died with diabetes. We were away and a bus run to Scotland, which I went on very, very often and used to enjoy them very well. Went with Ulster bus away to different hotels they called the Lochs and Glens. And part of the attraction there to me was a dance that they held every night after dinner.
Sure.
I enjoyed dancing. And on this occasion, I was with myself. Now, Brady was nothing or that. John Buchanan, man who went with my heavenly place after. I was on myself, I was on my own. And you went there, and very often the people that were there were Pierce, him and her, the man and his wife. And sometimes you got a woman to dance to, and sometimes you wouldn't. But this time, there were two spare women. And I started to dance for them. And I got on perfectly well. One of them was a hell of a good dancer. And I danced her, and I took my good of her. And she enjoyed dancing with me, and I enjoyed dancing with her. And I get the other end all an odd turn. I had the two of them. And after the dance would be over, crowd of us would gather around to tell out stories like we were telling now. And someone were there one night and they told about this and told about that. And one of those ladies turned to me and she says, "Your man," she says, "Bertie, of a fair age. Did ever you see or hear anything abnormal?" And I started and I told them a story from start to finish about the room and the house and everything. And they listened, spellbound. And when they were finished, these were two nurses, two retired nurses that I was dancing with. One of them gave the other a poke with her elbow. She said, "That man died with diabetes. He didn't die with drink. He died with diabetes." She said, "The urine that a man put out when he was dying with diabetes burned the same as sulfuric acid. And that man died with diabetes." And whether that was what left William McMahon that he didn't get his rest or not, I don't know. But he was blamed in the wrong. He died with diabetes. And he was said he died with thing. He drunk out of the wee and the wee braise they call it. He drunk out there till he got that full and he left him and set him on a horse, a thoroughbred. And they set him on the horse and they gave him the horse a crap in there. And the horse galloped. For that it got to the Gleck and the mother and the father come out and the horse had been a white froth with sweat and they took him off and they put him up the stairs and whatever he did during the night, that is what destroyed the floor. And they were able to tell whenever I was going telling the story. Aye. She said, "You're right. That man died with diabetes." She says, "You're right, a man dying with diabetes burned the same sulfuric acid." And that was exactly what the floor looked like. You couldn't have put your heel through it like that, but it was wheezing up like a turnip you get in the month of July.
Yeah, that's
and Johnny Doherty was able to tell me about the priest. Now, a whole lot of things we wouldn't have believed, and a whole lot of things that the Catholics would believe that we wouldn't believe. But we had to admit the Father Mullen and the business.
You knew Father Willie Campbell, you know, over in Burton.
It don't work for me. Out in that house.
There's the father for you. Father Willie Campbell. He was some character. We used to do a lot of shooting together at the same time. I was a friend of that. But at the same time, he was a young curate and he was dispatched up to Tyrone. Terry Dacer goes into Tyrone as well. And there was an old parish priest up there. He was a specialist in the diocese, apparently, in exorcism. You know,
yes.
And Father Campbell talked about
special.
Oh, he did, I don't know correctly. This is Father Campbell said he was a very holy, a very saintly man, you know. And he said, "I got on grand with me, he was the parish priest, my grand, and everything was going well until his one time." This is a bit of a hammer. This is Rose Holloway says, "There's a problem in a house now." Oh, he says, "There was a bad mess now." They didn't go into that detail of it, you know, but anyway, he says, but he said, the it's peace, they says to me, he says, we're going to have to visit, we're going to have to do an exorcism in this house, you know. Mm-hmm. And he says, no, he says, and he sat me down, he says, and he started going over to talk to me, you know, and he says, no, he says, could well be, he says, no, you know, we could well encounter Satan, he says, and this, you know, and you know the situation, he's one of the fallen angels, and he knows yes. all the things, he knows everything, and he, but all sorts of temptations and everything in your way, and he says, set all the, right, throw up all the sins of your past life and everything else, he's like, there would be a dirty hell in the but it was some kind of deal. But that way he says, went, he says, and went to the house, he says, and it was a way up some very, now he didn't go into any of the detail of that, now, don't expect him to send to the house, he says, and he says, but the house was an old type house, he says, it was just a, house, and he says, there were, and the door, the one there was a window, he said, the wee small panes of glasses, and many times about the place this pane of glass had been provided, and you just go out of the window.
Oh, yes.
And he said, and round the thing, and he says, but he says, we went up to the house, he says, and did round the whole thing, he says, there was a big family in it too, he says, but he says, the only thing about it, he says, there was a loft up above, he said, and it was just a state. Stair or not stair, ladder
up.
He says, and he says, we paid around the, each corner of the house. We mm-hmm. done, went through all the things. He says, went upstairs and we done that. He says, and I just go and plan. He says, now since this is this stage, you have to get feel right relieved. He says, at this stage, but he says, we can do it. He says, and he says, the parish priest of Melbourne, man, he says, now we're down the ladder first to guide him down. He says, and we took him down and to get his steps and all the he says, you come down, he says, and had him well down, he says, he just did that, he said his hands were on the top of the door, like that there, just like that there, he says, there were a tap door, and he says, the tap door just came right over, he says, and right across, both hands, both the on the Irish priest, and he says, Stallion County was that time, he says, had he taken him directly to the Stallion County, the blood was flying out, and everything else, he says, but he got him sorted out, and he says, I think they kept him on that night as well. He says, but he says, sadly, he says, hold on, he says, stay now a minute. He says, I want to talk to you. You have to stay with him. He says, talk to you. He says, you have to go back there tomorrow and say a mass in that house. And he says, be prepared, you know. He says, I went back the next day. He says, hurry, he says, that day, you. He says, I was nervous and glad in my life to get a mass in you fix that house.
Well, yeah, I believe that.
But that was the character. He was a character too. I tell me a few other stories too, but that for repeating.
He walked along with a McNaughton and an old circular saw with a cut tumor to me. An old circular saw, and what I know about saws now, you wouldn't have been safe standing up at the gable of Burke Meeting without saw going. I know enough now about saws.
But he was I don't know, so but he said that I was saying about
the Church of Rome yet trains priests
especially
for the exercise. Yeah,
right.
And the Church of England does it.
Aye.
But the Presbyterian they don't believe in it.
No, so well
I would find it hard not to believe in it after
the only case I can tell you made him in the man too retired, it was Father Brennan. It was the same sort of thing you're talking about. He finished up in the Nazareth House over here. In fact, his brother was an Irish ambassador to Rome at one stage or someone. But he was out in Dungiven, and the same thing, there were some. Now, I knew the house, it was funny enough, I remember the time, because me and Danny, right, we used to go up there, we never stayed after dark near the house, but we'd up and have a look at the house. But there's no talk of the countryside there. That apparently come to dark in the or dusk in the evening, they had to get out of the house.
Yes.
There was a history about it.
Yes.
The story was apparently that a young fellow involved too, but apparently the young fellow was killed or someone, it was an uncle had the place and or was on it, and the father, the family belonged to the young fellow, they were supposed to be up and after, but the young fellow disappeared, you know, and whatever, nothing ever proved. But it come to dusk in the evening, anyway, and the just had to bail out of the house. But the story was, anyway, that there was a priest, an old priest at that stage too, or was it Father Brennan? But they went to the minister first, and the minister teed it up, but apparently it wasn't effective. But they got the specialist in. He was Father Brown. He came. But all, but no, the first priest was that he can live, but he says if that strong apparently he could remove it, your tongue, but for 7 years outside the door, some under the step or something like that. But after they came back, when the play got up and was Father Brown was at help, they didn't bother, they would stay for Father Brown, and he went out that he was that was out. They were a Protestant family, Church of Ireland family, you know. And they got him out to do it, but at the end of it, they retired after that, they left, they was over in the Nazareth house, that's where he retired to there. Was the same thing like that.
Hard to explain that.
Hard to explain that there was something on me, but I remember that house. We used to be a great top of the country. We used to be out there at that time, you know, and, you know, in the summer. Mother was from out there, like, from out there, mother. But that was a great talk, apparently, in the countryside. All come to, they couldn't stay in the house after dark.